Gurudev, Jaya Jaya Gurudev. Jayam Vishnupad Paramahamsa Parivrajakacharya Ashtutara Shatashi Srimad His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur Ki Jai Vaishnav Bhaktivrinda Ki Jai Kishore Kishori Ki Jai Shri Shri Jagannath Baladev Subhadra Maharani Ki Jai Shri Shri Gauranitai Ki Jai All glories to the assembled devotees, all glories to Sri Guru and Sri Gauranga, all glories to Srila Prabhupada. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Narayanam namaskritya naram chaiva narottamam devim saraswatim vyasam tato jayam mudirayat nashta praishva badreshu nityam bhagavat sevaya bhagavati uttama shloke bhaktir bhavati naishtiki krishne swadham upagate dharma gyan adibisaha kalo nashta drisham asha puranarko dhunodita sadasevya srimad bhagavati katayasya shravana matrena harischitam samashraye paramananda pathaya prema varshyaksharayate sarvada sarvasevyaya shri krishnaya namostume sarva vedanta saram hi shri bhagavatam ishate Tatra samrita chiptasya nanyatra shadrati kvachit. Hare Krishna, good morning. We're back at it again. The 24th chapter of the 10th canto, the worshipping of Govardhan Hill. Today we're doing text 14. Asti chet ishvara kaschit phalarupyanya karmanam kartaram bhajate sopi nahya kartu prabodhi saha asti chet ishvara kaschit phalarupyanya karmanam kartaram bhajate sopi nahya kartu prabodhi saha. Asti chet ishvara kaschit phalarupyanya karmanam kartaram bhajate sopi nahya kartu prabodhi saha. And the word for word, asti. There is. Chet. If hypothetically. Ishwaraha. A supreme controller. Kaschit. Someone. Palarupi. Serving to award fruitive results. Anya karmanam. Of the activities of other persons. Kartaram, the performer of activity. Bhajate, depends upon. Saha, he, api, even. Na, not. He, after all. Akartuhu, of one who performs no activity. Prabhuhu, the master. He, certainly, saha, he. There's a lot of he's in English and he's in Sanskrit there, and even for me, like, just saying it's like, he certainly, saha, he. It's like, what the hell is this? So the translation, Even if there is some supreme controller who awards all others the results of their activities, he must also depend upon a performer's engaging in activity. After all, there is no question of being the bestower of fruitive results unless fruitive activities have actually been performed. And the purport by the disciples of Srila Prabhupada, His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Here, Lord Krishna argues that if there is a supreme controller, he must depend on a performer of activity to reciprocate with and must therefore also be subject to the laws of karma, being obliged to award happiness and distress to conditioned souls according to the laws of good and evil. This superficial argument neglects the obvious point that the laws of nature that prescribe the good and bad results of pious and impious acts are themselves creations of the all-good Supreme Lord. Being the creator and sustainer of these laws, the Lord is not subject to them. Furthermore, the Lord is not dependent on the work of the conditioned souls, since he is satisfied and complete within himself. Out of his all-merciful nature, he awards the results appropriate to our activities. That which we call destiny, fate, or karma is an elaborate and subtle system of rewards and punishments meant for gradually encouraging conditioned souls to evolve to the stage of perfect consciousness, which is their original constitutional nature. The Supreme Personality of Godhead has so dexterously formulated and applied the laws of material nature governing punishment and reward for human behavior that the living being is discouraged from sin and encouraged towards goodness without suffering any significant interference with his free will as an eternal soul. In contrast to the material nature, the Lord exhibits his essential nature in the spiritual world, where he reciprocates the eternal love of his pure devotees. Such loving affairs are based completely on the mutual freedom of the Lord and his devotees, not on a mechanical reciprocity of coinciding self-interests. The Supreme Lord, assisted by his pure devotees, repeatedly offers the conditioned souls of this world the opportunity to give up their bizarre attempt at exploiting the material universe and go back home, back to Godhead, for an eternal life of bliss and knowledge. Considering all these points, the atheistic arguments given here by Lord Krishna in a playful mood are not to be taken seriously. Om Agyanati Mirandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militamina Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Swapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yutapadakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunatan Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakan Vitamscha He Krishna Karuna Sindho Dhina Bandho Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrinda Vaneshwari Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prashtaya Bhutade Shimate Bhaktivedanta Swami Niti Namine Namaste Saraswate Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschatya Deshatarine Mukam Karoti Vachalam Pangum Langayate Girim Yat Kripam Tamaham Vande Shri Gurum Dinatararam Vanchakalpa Tarubhyascha Kripasindhu Bhivacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. So, we're back at it. More angles. This pastime has so many angles. It's nice because we can just jump around and go go all over the place, which I'm going to do. I'm not really going to speak about the particulars of this verse because we already spent one whole class explaining why we're not to take Krishna's words here seriously, which Prabhupada's disciples, this sounds like Kridayananda Maharaj. I've heard from a few devotees that were involved in the process at that time and were around that all of the more lengthy purports, because there were two, it was Gopi Purandan Prabhu and it was Kridayananda Maharaj that were mainly writing the commentaries after Srila Prabhupada. And the very lengthy ones that would try to get across some kind of subsidiary philosophical points or go into, you know, a more, I guess, a preaching mood, they were very much Kridayananda Maharaj's purports. And the ones that were very much just more or less direct quotations from the acharyas and, you know, just edited for clarity or, you know, reworded, those were Gopi Purandan Prabhu's. They tended to be quite short. And so this, it sounds like a classic Kridayananda Maharaj purport. And it's quite nice. He sums up at the end with this sentence, considering all these points, the atheistic arguments given here by Lord Krishna in a playful mood are not to be taken seriously. So that we talked about the other day, that our acharyas, they point out that actually this is Krishna just playing a joke. He's forwarding a pastime. Even though it says Sri Bhagavan Uvacha, we don't just post that on the wall and say this is our new philosophy. This has come from the Lord's mouth, because we can say that Bhagavad Gita came from Krishna's mouth. Therefore, it's Bhagavad Gita. The name is the song of God. It's God's speech. So here, God is also singing a song, but this song we should understand the context of, because otherwise we'll be quite bewildered. Because he's speaking atheism. So they very nicely summed that up. I want to touch on why he's singing this song. Why is he speaking like this to Nanda Maharaj? And there are many whys. There are many reasons for this, many causes for it. Because Krishna, being the absolute truth, being omniscient and omnipotent, even though most of the time in Vraj he's covered up, and so he doesn't have access to that, because it would get in the way of the entire purpose of Raj's existence. He can do many things with one action. He can move his finger one time and 100 things will happen because of that, and everything just works out that way. Everything he does, from a scientific perspective, or from the perspective of somebody who is very meticulous and efficient, there's nobody more efficient than Krishna. Everything he does is ripe with deep, deep, deep meaning, and it fulfills whatever purpose he sets out to fulfill in the most efficient, perfect, beautiful, concise, poetic way that you can imagine. So, even when he's doing something like this, which seems so unbelievable, because we also have to understand the context that it falls into, Krishna's just a little boy in Vraj. Nanda Maharaj, obviously, it's being shown that he's not a big pundit. He's not knowledgeable in the Vedas and in, you know, the different darshans of Vedic philosophy. He's just a simple cowherd man. He knows something, but mostly, as per Vedic society, they just let the brahmanas handle all of that. They make sure that they give charity to proper, upstanding brahmanas who know all these things, and they just take care of their cows. Therefore, Nanda Maharaj and all the other cowherd men, they hear this philosophy of Krishna's and they don't say, "No, no, no, what are you talking? This is ridiculous. No one, who taught you this? I didn't teach you this," because Nanda Maharaj, he's a simple cowherd man. He doesn't know these things. He just knows the cows, and he knows Vrindavan, and he knows he loves his son. And so, Krishna is able to bewilder them. And there's so many reasons, that because that's what I want to touch on, is why. Why is he doing such a seemingly paradoxical thing? Why is he disrupting the entire flow of normalcy in Vrindavan right now? Because it's normal what they're doing. They're offering this yajna for rain so the cows can have grass, so everybody can be peaceful, so Krishna can be protected, so everything can be happy. It's said in Vraj, because Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, don't mix too closely with the Vrajvasis. He He told this to Rupa and Sanatan, and especially to Jagadananda Pandit when he sent him. He said, don't mix too closely with the Vrajvasis because they're very dear to Krishna, and you may become bewildered by some of the things that they do. They have, because they're born in Vraj, they have their own ways and their own means, and it can be very confusing, actually, what they do. So if you go to Vraj, sometimes you'll walk in to a shop or something and you'll see a big picture of Durga. And you'll think, what is this? Why are they worshipping Durga? They should be worshipping Krishna. This is Vrindavan. What is it? What is this? Why is there's a garland on Durga and they have some lamp there that they offer every morning for their shop? And if you ask them, a lot of times you'll get some answer like this. They'll say, Krishna is a little boy. We're worshipping Durga to protect Krishna. Because this is their mood. This is the mood of Raj. This is what they do. They don't have this idea. Again, even today in modern society, it's not to say that they're deeply, it's hard to word that. It's not to say that they're deeply, it's also not to say that they're not, because they're born in Vrindavan, they're Vrajvasis. But it's not to say that they're on some unbelievably high platform like Bhav, and therefore they're acting like this, but it's just part of their tradition, it's part of who they are, it's part of their soul. If you go to Nandigao, if you go to these different places in Vrindavan, the people that live there that still have a good shred of the culture, they have this very, very, very intimate understanding of Krishna and who Krishna is. And when you hear them speak, when you see what they do in their lives, when you see how simply they live, you can see there is definitely something there. So it's quite interesting. So why is Krishna disrupting this mood where Nanda Maharaj is just worshipping Indra and he's doing what he does? One of our acharyas says that Krishna's seen this many times because it's a common occurrence. It's not that this was the first time and Krishna's like, wait a second, why are you starting this crazy thing? It's been going on since Krishna can remember. And since Nanda Maharaj can remember, his father also did it. It's a normal thing for farmers. So why is Krishna disrupting this? Why is he deciding, no, we shouldn't do this anymore? Why does he bring such chaos that we're going to hear about going forward into the lives of the Vrajvasis? Well, to sum it up shortly, he wants to create a festival because Vrindavan is all about partying. To be honest, that's what Vrindavan is for. Vrindavan means Krishna with his devotees having unbelievable amounts of fun. That's the only thing it's there for. One man, he went to India from Germany, and he went around to all of the different temples that he could find. I don't know where in India he was. I don't think he made a pilgrimage of the whole of India. But in whatever place he was in, he went to this temple and that temple and that temple, and he was inquisitive. Because in Europe, they were also captivated by the Vedas, the ones that didn't try to destroy them for Christianity, were actually captivated. Particularly the Germans were actually captivated by the philosophy of the Vedas. Prabhupada said that actually the Germans, they have some of the Vedas because they so meticulously saved them and researched them and stored them. They have access to some Vedic texts that India no longer has access to. Somewhere in Germany. As Prabhupada said this, it's interesting. And so this German man, he went around to these different temples and he asked the priests there, so what is this god doing? And so when he went to the Durga Mandap, or went to the Durga temple, then the priest said, oh, she's killing the demons, and she's drinking their blood and protecting the world. And so he went on, and he saw Lord Shiva, and he asked the pujari, what is he doing? And so he said, he's wrapped in meditation. Interesting. So he went on. He saw Ganesh. What is he doing? He removes all of the obstacles of anyone who prays to him. And he went on and on and on and on. This one is doing this, this one is doing this. Finally came to a Krishna temple and he saw him standing there. And he asked the pujari, what is he doing? He says, he doesn't have anything to do. He just stands around and plays the flute and plays with his devotees. And the German man, being a first-class intelligence, said, this must be God. Because that's the highest echelon of God. The highest reach of God's existence is just for play. It's for lila, as our philosophy explains. God has nothing to do but play. Because everything else is taken care of just by him desiring it to be taken care of. He has what's called the Sarva Sankalpa Shakti. So his Sarva Sankalpa Shakti takes care of everything. He just thinks it, as Prabhupada said, and then one of his Shaktis, as he thinks it, makes it happen. So he doesn't have to worry about any of that. But there's one thing that doesn't work like that. And that's relationships and love. Love is not something that you're satisfied by making it happen immediately. Rasa is a relationship and it flows between two people. It requires time. It requires the other person wanting to be in the relationship. So Krishna's Sarva Sankalpa Shakti, it isn't able to just fulfill that desire of his in an instant, because that's not the nature of love. The nature of love is a feeling and a flow that happens between two entities. And so in God's highest manifestation, the only thing he's concerned with is love. He's only concerned with that reciprocation, because everything else for him is a paltry little thing that can be taken care of easily. It can be done no matter what. He has the six opulences. He's the most strong, the most beautiful, the most intelligent. He's the most renounced, because he has everything. He has no reason to be attached to it, because there's no question of anyone who will ever be better than him at anything. He has no reason to be attached to it, because generally we're attached to things that we can do nicely, because we have to defend them and we want to show other people that we're the best. But that desire to show other people that we're the best comes from a place of fear that we are not the best. Because we fear that actually somebody might come around the corner who's better than me. I always have to be on my A game. Krishna never has to be on his A game, because he is the A game. There is nobody better than Krishna. And so he doesn't have to worry about it. He can be fully renounced. He doesn't have to worry about all of that. So the only thing he's interested in is rasa. The only thing he's interested in is how to have deeper and deeper loving relationships with his devotees. Therefore, Vrindavan exists. Therefore, all of that, all the bhagas, all of the opulences, everything goes away. Because those things get in the way of intimacy. They stop him from being able to have deep relationships with these people. Because it's like if you're walking down the street, or say you're in a cafe, and you happen to meet somebody, and you strike up a really nice conversation with them, and you find, this person's really cool. You just make a friend, which this doesn't happen so much anymore nowadays. This art is being lost because we have cell phones and we have, you know, Facebook and all this ridiculous stuff, and people, they're losing the ability to speak one-on-one. But let's just give a hypothetical, because it's not so archaic that it doesn't happen. It's just, it used to be an everyday thing, and it used to be just a part of life, and now it's become something that, you know, one day kids will look at a museum exhibit and they'll see two people in a cafe, like a diorama, and the person walking them through it will say, yes, this is how people used to make friends. They used to see each other in person, and they used to say something like, hi, how's your day? And then the other person, oh, it's going well, how's yours? What do you do for work? So this is, it's not so antiquated that we can still understand it. So say you make a friend. Is someone at the door? I'll just wait because I don't want to just speak to the wall. So say you make a friend, you're in a cafe. I know this is a far out example. And then, after about 20 minutes, you realize this person is a famous Hollywood actor. He just won a Grammy, like, 2 months ago. He's like the cream of the cream. And somehow you didn't notice him. He was wearing sunglasses, or he had a hat in a funny way. As soon as you realize that, the whole relationship changes. You may find yourself stammering. You may find that, wow, I have a difficulty speaking to this person. Now, all of a sudden, you want his autograph. You want to take a selfie with him. This reverence gets in the way of the relationship. Before, there was some intimacy. He was just a regular person. And you were able to say, oh, yeah, man, you know, I really love that, or I really hate that, or, you know, yeah, I totally understand that. You were on a common ground. he's just a normal person, you're just a normal person. But as soon as you realize this person is unbelievably famous, the whole thing changes. So it's the same with Krishna. When he is Vishnu, when he's in the position, he's always in the position, but when he's playing the part and outwardly in the position of being God, then his devotees, when they see him, they fall on the ground. They pay their obeisances. They offer him beautifully composed stutis, which are amazing, by the way. There's nothing wrong with this. We're talking about God's heart now. They offer him these amazing prayers. They cry tears. They say, oh, you are Jagatpate. You are the Lord of the universe. You are the Sarvakarana Karanam. You're the cause of everything. Everything rests on you and in you. And yet you are not in it because you're not bound to it. So they say so many wonderful philosophical things. And they say deep things. And they offer chamara. And they only offer the best of food. And if the food somehow accidentally, if the wrong breeze blows over the plate from the wrong direction with, you know, carrying inauspicious whatever, then it's thrown away and they make something new because this is God and it has to be perfect. But for Krishna, he's not attached to all of that because he just already has it and he wants something more. And so he sets aside, in Vrindavan, he sets aside all of the opulence. Actually, it's kind of paradoxical, because the nature of God is paradoxical and simultaneously harmonious. Everything is coming from Krishna. Everything is coming from this Vrindavan. It's not that God was in Vaikuntha, and then he thought, I want more intimacy, and then Vrindavan came. This is actually the idea, to some degree, of other Vaishnav Sampradayas, because they say Vishnu is Swayam Bhagavan and Krishna is an avatar. But we turn everything on its head. Because of the superiority of the rasa, because of the superiority of the intimacy of Vrindavan, we say Vrindavan must be. And the Bhagavatam says, we don't say. We say means we follow the Bhagavatam. The Bhagavatam says that Krishna is Swayam Bhagavan. Because he has the highest intimacy. He has superiority in his dealings. If we look at them from an analytical standpoint, from the standpoint of love, he has the deepest relationships, so therefore he must be Swayam Bhagavan. Other sampradayas, they say it's the other way around. But for us, it's a little difficult to think that, how does it work that actually God, as God, is coming from God as the cowherd boy? It's an interesting thing to think about. Anyway, that's not the direction I'm trying to go today. I just wanted to throw that out there, that you can give another class on that. So, what I want to point out today is how paradoxical Krishna's nature is in relation to this pastime. And to do that, I have to bring another pastime into the thing. So we all remember Lord Brahma's Leela, correct? We remember Brahma Vimohan Leela, where Lord Brahma was bewildered by Krishna. And we can juxtapose that with this Govardhan Leela. And we can take Lord Indra and Lord Brahma, and we can analyze them. Now, Damodar, what did Lord Brahma do? Yes. How long did he take them for? That's what happened in Vraj, but for a moment. He just quickly, do you remember what his intention was? So he was a bit inquisitive, and he was thinking, like, I don't know. He had a serious doubt, and he thought, what is going on here? And so he just took the cowherd boys for a moment. Now, Jai Baladev, what did Indra do? Yeah, just like quickly, so, that is a good way to say it. He wanted to commit homicide. Actually, it says that. It's either in Gopal Champu or in Ananda Vrindavan Champu. I haven't read them, but I've heard them quoted extensively in reference to this pastime, that Indra, he sent the Samvartaka clouds, that's in the Bhagavatam, to flood Vrindavan. The Samvartaka clouds, they're used at the end of the universe to destroy the universe. He sent those just to destroy Vrindavan. Not only did he send them just to destroy Vrindavan, he said, you go, because they're persons. So he spoke to them. He said, you go and you kill every Vrajvasi, every single one of them. You don't stop until they're all dead. except Nanda Maharaj. You leave Nanda Maharaj alive, and I will come and kill him myself. I want him to see everyone he loves die, and then I will come and kill him. Ruthless. Brutal. Brutal, 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 vicious act. Raghunath Das Goswami says, he says a lot of things. What's the one? Surapati Krita Dhirga. Krita Dhirga. Drohato Goshtaraksham. He brutally, with the strongest imaginable attack, he attacked the Vrajvasis. And Krishna lifted the hill to protect them, Goshtaraksham. So, it's brutal. Lord Brahma, he did almost nothing. He did a little test. And yes, because his moment is a year in this realm, and then it was a year of supposed separation. And that's even more interesting, because it wasn't really separated. There was nothing. Krishna was still with his coward boys. Anyway, that's too far. So if we look at Lord Brahma and we look at Indra, we see, paradoxically, that even though Indra did such a terrible thing, he was forgiven very quickly. And the way he was forgiven was quite amazing. Mother Surabhi brought him. He went to Mother Surabhi, Mother Cow, and said, please, I've made a huge mistake. Will you please bail me out of this one? And she brings him to Krishna, and she pleads on his behalf. So that's one angle. He was forgiven very nicely because he took shelter of a devotee. But there's another angle. Because not only did he forgive him, he looked at him, Krishna spoke to him, and then he allowed him to do wonderful worship of him, accepted the worship, and accepted the new name. This is where Krishna got the name Govinda. Whereas if we look at Lord Brahma, Krishna didn't even speak to him. He wouldn't even look at him. He was so angry at what Lord Brahma had done. Now, Krishna's anger is transcendental. But our acharyas explain, he wasn't happy with what Lord Brahma did. And so he didn't even look at him. And eventually, after offering all of the amazing prayers that he offered, Lord Brahma just got up and excused himself. He just realized, okay, yeah, I'm not going to get any further. He's not killed me. He's not chastising me. So I will leave. I've asked what I could. And then he says, okay, Lord Krishna, I will take your leave, please. So please excuse me. And then he goes. But Krishna wouldn't even look at him. It's very harsh chastisement if you're trying to speak to somebody, especially somebody superior to you who you're invested in. Like if you go to see your guru and you know he's not happy with you and he doesn't even look at you. He won't even look at you. He knows you're there, obviously, and he just keeps doing what he's doing and ignores you. It pains the heart like anything. So Krishna did this to Lord Brahma, who did almost nothing. And he treated Indra like this, who did such a horrible thing. He forgave him nearly instantly. He said, my son, yes, you made a great mistake. You know, but anyway, don't worry about it. You'll be okay. Don't be prideful in the future. That's what he said. And even that, Krishna knew he would be prideful again because he would go and try to steal the Parijata tree and Indra would fight him. Because Indra is being used also for the sake of the Leelas. And we hear something quite amazing. Actually, we get a glimpse into Krishna's heart by juxtaposing these two pastimes. That Krishna was pleased with the actions of Indra because he brought all of the Vrajvasis together. He facilitated the festival of the Govardhan Leela, which was 7 days of all of Krishna's devotees, all of his most intimate devotees, with him, fixated on him, together at once, which had never happened before. It's the only Leela where absolutely everyone is continuously always there. Kaliya Leela also is like that. But the mood of Kaliya Leela is very much different because there's a lot of sorrow on the part of the Vrajvasis. They're terrified that Krishna is going to be killed by this snake, and then they faint. And so it's a little bit different. It's not the same mood. Govardhan Leela is very special because they have 7 continuous days of relishing Krishna and just staring at Krishna. Whereas Lord Brahma, he caused separation. He caused Krishna to have to be away from his friends for nearly a year. And so Krishna was much, much, much angrier at Lord Brahma. And he wasn't really angry at Indra at all, because Indra was just a puppet. Because this is what Krishna wants. He wants a festival. He does whatever he has to do. Yena kena prakarena. By any means necessary, he increases the love of his devotees. And that's the amazing thing about this festival, is Krishna's ability to reciprocate with everyone at the same time. Just standing there, holding up the hill, each devotee is staring at him, and it's like he's staring back at them alone the whole time. And nobody has to think, oh, there's nothing else to do but stare at Krishna. There's nothing else to do but speak to Krishna. They're speaking to him. They're saying, oh, are you getting tired? Different people in different rasas are saying different things. His mother, the entire time, she's feeling the height, practically, of Vatsalya Ras. Because Vatsalya Ras is very much based on anxiety. Anybody with a mother knows that a mother's love is expressed in her anxiety over her child's welfare. That's how a mother's love is expressed. It's also expressed in hugs and kisses and all this, but it really peaks with anxiety over one's child's welfare. We see the Damodar Lila. Mother Yashoda, she was so moved by the fact that she thought her son might grow up to be a thief, that her, with such a pure heart, who could never hurt anybody, she went all the way to the extent of tying her son up. She chased him with a stick, and then she tied him up because she was afraid, because that anxiety was there. My son will grow up to be a thief. Oh my God. It can happen. And so this Govardhan Leela was happening, and Krishna's holding up this thing, holding up this hill. And he's sitting there, and she's thinking, oh my God, my son, he doesn't work, he doesn't do anything, he's not strong. Well, she doesn't see Krishna as this brawny, strong guy. He's not. He's not a big, strong man. He herds the cows, he walks around, he's a little bit lazy. That's Krishna's thing. He's not a Shudra, you know? And so she thinks, how is he doing this? And how long will he be able to do it? And she's just in anxiety. Nerve-wracking anxiety. It's Vatsalya Ras. Any mother knows. This is really, so there's some special relish here. And for her, it's the deepest ecstasy. And Nanda Maharaj, he's thinking, wow. How is he doing that? We've always heard all these crazy things Krishna does. And anyway, still he's thinking, this is my little son. So he holds up his sticks. Him and the cowherd boys, they all hold up, cowherd men, they all hold up their sticks as if to help, because they think there's no possible way he can do this alone. And then they actually think, yes, we're all holding the hill up. We're holding the hill up, because if we let go, Krishna will certainly be crushed, and then we'll all be crushed. And the cowherd boys, they're thinking, because they've seen Krishna do so many amazing things, they're thinking, oh, he's doing another crazy thing. This, and they're joking with him, and they're making jokes about him, and they're saying, I always beat you at wrestling. You're going to faint at any moment. You can't hold this hill up any longer. And they hold their sticks up also, as if to joke. You see, you won't be able to do it without us. I beat you in wrestling just yesterday. What is this? And Madhu Mangal, he's joking. He tells Mother Yashoda, don't be in anxiety. Because you're worshipping the Brahmanas nicely, and because you have me. Actually, I'm giving my Brahma Tejas. He's not holding the hill up. I'm using him to hold the hill up. It's my brahminical power. And Mother Yashoda, if you don't give me a ladu, then I'll withdraw that power. So give me a ladu now. Bhiksham Dehi, you have to give me a ladu. Otherwise, everything will be finished. And then Mother Yashoda chastises Madhu Mangal. Stop joking right now. This is not the time for jokes. So much is going on. The gopis, they have the opportunity to stare at Krishna unabashedly. For the first time. In the Kaliya Leela, they had an opportunity. There are different tellings of different Leelas. In one Kaliya Leela, they actually get on the hoods of Kali and dance with Krishna. And they have a Rasa Leela. While all the other Rajvasis are fainted, Krishna says, why don't you come up here? This is a great place to dance. And they dance. But in another time, in the Kaliya Leela, they get to see him. And it's the first time they really see him. And it's amazing. But it's not like the Govardhan Leela. Govardhan Leela is 7 days straight, and no one can tell them not to look at Krishna. Because Krishna's standing there and he's doing such an amazing thing that nobody can blame anybody for looking at Krishna. Nobody will think, oh, these girls, they're transfixed on Krishna. What is this? They have husbands. Because everyone, their husbands are also staring at Krishna because it's amazing what he's doing. And so they're able to look so intimately upon Krishna for the first time. Actually, there's one beautiful verse, which sadly I couldn't find, but I remember the English translation, that one of Srimati Radharani's friends, she says, hey, She says this to Srimati Radharani, get out of here. Please move to the side. Because she's standing right in front near Krishna. She says, move to the side. If he looks at you any longer, he may become bewildered and he may drop the hill and then we'll all be finished. Move to the side, Radha. Please move to the side. And so then she goes to move to the side. And Krishna sighs. And the hill starts to shake. And then they say, no, 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 you come right back here and you stand right here. You stand right here, don't go anywhere. In this way, Krishna's attachment for Srimati Radharani is there. All of these things, they're exchanged simultaneously and infinitely. This is a drop. This isn't even a half of a half of a half of a half of a percent of what goes on for those 7 days. And the unbelievable intimate reciprocations that happen because of this festival. And this is what Krishna wants. This is the only thing Krishna exists for. He doesn't care about anything else. Everything else is just subsidiary. It's just some little thing. It's not even carried out by him. It's carried out by his shaktis. It's carried out by his superintendents. As Srila Prabhupada would say, the demigods, they do the other things. Vishnu does the other things, the three Vishnus. They take care of the material world and the cosmic manifestation. And even all of the devotees in Vaikuntha, they're taken care of. Because they want that bhav, they have that bhav, they want to worship God as God, they want to worship God as Ram, as a king. There's also, it's very intimate, even those that want to worship Krishna, almost like Krishna and Vraj, but still with some opulence, Dwarka is there, but Krishna's heart is fulfilled in Vraj. Krishna only wants to reciprocate with the devotees in Vraj. That's really his... That's the whole point of his existence. He has no other thing to do. And so, this is just one other angle that we can take on this wonderful Govardhan Leela. Hopefully, we can keep going deeper. Because there are so many other angles, there's so much. We can keep going and keep going. Even here, I had to stop myself because I start going in one way, and it's like, wait, wait, no, no, no. We have a purpose here. We're going in a particular direction. It's really quite amazing how many things Krishna is teaching us and how many things our acharyas have shown us through this particular leela. And so I'll end with a nice pranam to Giriraj, because if we take shelter of Giriraj, as Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur said, we can attain the prema that's within his heart. If we don't take shelter of Giriraj, then it can be very difficult. It will be very difficult. So namaste Girirajaya Sri Govardhana Namine Ashesha Klesha Nashaya Paramananda Dayine. I offer my obeisances to Giriraj, who is Govardhan. Ashesha Klesha Nashaya, all miseries he destroys, like nothing. He removes all miseries, no problem. You don't even have to think about it. Ashesha Klesha Nashaya Paramananda Dayine. And he gives Paramananda. He gives Prema Bhakti. He gives the highest bliss. So I offer my respects to him. I offer my obeisances to him. I fall on the ground. I roll in his dust. Because he's so, so, so dear to Krishna. So that's what I can churn out of this. We have a little bit of time for questions. I have to run because I have to cook Rajbhog. So we'll have to make it a little bit abbreviated. But if either one of you have something, comment, question, or correction, then it's welcome. Yadatra skalitam kinchit vidvamsa purayantu tat yadatra shoshtavam kinchit tad guru reva menahi. If you saw something bad here, then it's to be expected. Please correct it. You're learned Vaishnavas. If you saw something nice here, some shoshtavam, then please know that it is not mine. It's my guru's.
There's so much that you can churn out of just this one pastime, and it's, yeah, I like how you put it, how it's like, you could even say it's like, yeah, it's like a festival of different relationships all condensed into those 7 days. And I never really thought about it that way, that this is like one of those rare instances where all of the Brajbasis are all together at the same time. That usually doesn't happen.
The rare instance.
Yeah. And yeah, just like one like funny thing I remember reading was, amongst all the other like emotions and relationships that Krishna was experiencing during that time, one of them was bashfulness, because he was checking out some of the gopis that were like off to the side or whatever, and I think Balaram had caught him like checking them out, and he got bashful and he blushed or whatever. I thought that was really funny. But then I was also thinking about how, you know, sometimes I'll think, you know, when Krishna does all these, like, obviously very, like, superhuman things, like lifting up a hill with a pinky or, like, killing this demon or, like, you know, swallowing a forest fire and stuff like that. And I used to think, like, yeah, how can they see all these things and not automatically come to that conclusion? Like, all right, well, obviously he's God, or he's, like, someone that we should be, like, really, like, you know, reverential of. But then it's funny, like, all these kind of, like, it's almost comical in a way, like, the mental gymnastics that they kind of, or the conclusions that they come to, like, I think Krishna said, like, you know, Govardhan is our protector, and because we worshipped him, he became as light as a feather or something. So look, it's so easy, even I can lift him up or something. So it wasn't that they necessarily thought that Krishna was this super strong guy, but they're like, oh, wow, Govardhan is protecting us because he's, you know, becoming as light as a feather. And, you know, anyone can pick him up, even Krishna, who's not particularly, like, athletic or something like that. So it's just... What's that? Or Shriyan, he's not Schwarzenegger. Yeah. This is some interesting little, extra little things to tie into it, too.
Yeah, one of Krishna's qualities that Rupa Goswami tells us about is that he is an expert in all languages. And we can take that to mean that if Krishna wanted to speak to you, he could speak to you in perfect Portuguese or perfect French or perfect Sanskrit or whatever. But another thing that we can understand from this is that it means Krishna is the most expert communicator. He knows how to get his point across very nicely, as is shown in this Asat Karyavad and in this this Sankhya philosophy that he convinces Nanda Maharaj with. So, when he wants to trick someone, he's very good at doing it with words. He's very, very good at just saying, what do you mean? Quick as a whip. Govardhan is doing all of this. He made himself light as a feather, so even some little, I'm just 8, you know, I'm able to lift him. And then they go, oh my God, that makes sense. He's right. What to say? And then, back to normal. But it's also said, there's so many, I just want to highlight some of these now since you brought that up. These mental gymnastics they go through, because they're really bewildered by the words of Garga Muni, because Garga Muni, he said, he'll be like Narayan. He'll be just like Narayan, which he's Narayan. He's Narayan is like him, actually, because Narayan is inferior to him in the level of incarnations. They're both Vishnu Tattva, so he's not inferior, but Narayan is his Amsha, or his Kala, sorry, Amshas are the Jivas. So the Vrajvasis, they see all these crazy things, and they just think Krishna's a demigod. Him and his brother must be demigods, because in Vedic culture, and particularly in the culture where the demigods are viewable, because in Dwapara Yuga, in Treta Yuga, in Satya Yuga, you could meet the demigods. It was in this, in Kali Yuga, everything's covered over, so it makes atheism very easy. But atheism was difficult then, because the world was a lot more mystical. The Brahmanas still had the power to chant mantras and do amazing things with them. The world was set up in such a way that the actual Vedic truth and reality was much less obfuscated. Now it's obfuscated to facilitate people being a lot more adharmic. Because if you live in a world like that, you can't be so adharmic. You can't be so... Even in that world, with that worldview, the asuras have dharma. Hiranyakashipu, in the 7th canto... To pacify his family, he says, don't worry about the death of Hiranyaksha, because he perfectly carried out his dharma as a demon. And so he will get nothing but good. Because if the asuras, if they do asura dharma, they go to Bilaswarga. They go to the heavenly planets for the atheists. The atheist means that, in that context, atheist means people who don't like Vishnu, who don't recognize him as superior, but they know he exists. And they hate him, like Hiranyakashipu. He's an atheist, but he wanted to kill Vishnu. Now, atheist means I deny his existence. It's childish. But so in that time, it's very hard to be against. It's very hard to be so sinful as you can be in Kali Yuga. So in that time, sorry, this is the I went on a bit of a tangent, but it's connected. At that time, it was easy to think these boys were demigods before and they've incarnated in these bodies. We were pious because of something good we did or some blessings we got from some sages. Garga Muni blessed us. We have this demigod as our son. But they don't think he's God. They can't think he's God. There's no question for the Vrajvasis of thinking he's God. Because a demigod can do many wonderful things. They can lift hills and they can, you know, they can kill demons and all of these things. So they can go that far. And then they doubt because Krishna does things like lie and that things the demigods wouldn't do. Or he's defeated in wrestling. Or he's henpecked by his girlfriend. There are things that also cast doubt on that. But at the height of it, the farthest they can go is think, oh, he must be some great demigod. So it's like that. This is all organized by the Leela Shakti and by his other Shaktis, by Yogamaya, to keep him in this particular place and to keep them in this particular place so that nothing gets in the way of their love.
And it kind of heightens a little bit too when he does get defeated in wrestling, for example, because then the boys that defeat him in wrestling are like, all right, well, if he is a demigod, then we must be demigods also because we defeated
him. Actually,
that
happens here.
Oh, is that right?
That's amazing. That happens here. He lifts the hill, and then they all think he must be a demigod. And all the boys, they say, yes, we are also demigods. I beat him in wrestling just last time. I am also a big demigod. And then it turns into a big joke. And they run around, and they play demigod in the forest and whatever, and they fight, and they're, oh, I'm this one. These descriptions are there, but the Bhagavatam tells us this. One of our acharyas tells us this in relation to this pastime. This happens, and then they think, yes, we are also demigods. Ha, ha, ha. So it's like that. It's just fun. Vraj is just the most intense, emotional, unbelievable, deep, and beautiful thing anyone can imagine. And the more we hear about it, the more we can become attracted to that. Because in comparison to that, everything we're experiencing is gray. It's not even good or bad. It's not wonderful, and it's also not horrible. It's just gray. It's stuck in the middle. Because it's not even the intensity that we feel in anguish in this world is still nothing compared to what one feels in spiritual life. It's blissful anguish, but it's still anguish. The separation that the Vrajvasis feel. Mother Yashoda, she doesn't eat for 100 years. She doesn't clean anything for 100 years. She doesn't move. She just sits by the window and waits for Krishna to come back. There is no depression. There is no anguish you can feel in this world that's more intense than that. So this world is just gray. I heard one wonderful quote that really helps drive this point home. Hate is not the opposite of love. Indifference is the opposite of love. Indifference is the color gray. That's where we are in the material world. We're just stuck in the gray zone, and nothing will ever be fulfilling. No suffering will ever be completely overpowering. It will run its course, and then it will go away. And then because of that relative suffering, we'll be able to experience what we think is relative happiness. But really, we're just fluctuating to different sides of the shade of gray. We're just moving, oh, this is a little less gray, this is a little more gray, but it's all gray. If we really want to move into the realm of transcendental extremes, into the realm of real experience, we have to go to the spiritual world. And the more we hear about that, the more we hear about real transcendental experiences, then the more we can become captivated and we can think, yes, let me give up this gray. Nothing here I will experience is going to be anything near what I could experience, what my guru is trying to give me, what my guru's guru is trying to give me, what Krishna is trying to give me. Nothing will come near that. So if we hold on to that understanding, then we can actually move towards that. But we have to hear about it. And we have to, beyond hear about it, because hearing should not be passive, we have to think about it. We have to take these things. It's very wonderful, just like I said something, and then you go, wow, that reminds me of this. Your Guru Maharaj, Vaisheshika Prabhu, he's very good about this, getting reflections, getting people to engage with the knowledge. It's not enough to just hear it and let it passively flow through your ears. That's also powerful, but ultimately that's meant to bring you to the point of engaging with that. Because that knowledge is not just knowledge. It is non-different from the actual experience that's being described. Knowledge of Krishna's pastimes is non-different from Krishna's pastimes. And it is only one's preconceptions and one's proclivities towards enjoying matter that stop one from experiencing that. Just like with the Holy Name is Krishna. And if you're at the level of realization that you can experience that, it will be there. It's you that's standing in the way. It's the same with Krishna's pastimes, and arguably, Krishna's pastimes, and specifically what's given in the Bhagavatam, is even more accessible than the Holy Name, because they give access to the Holy Name, and they give a purport on the Holy Name. Therefore, the Bhagavatam begins with the Holy Name, it ends with the Holy Name, and the middle of it is the Holy Name. The sixth canto, the Ajamil pastime, is there. In the beginning, we hear this verse. Apana samsrutim ghoram yannama vivasho grinan sad tata sadyo vimucheta yad bibeti swayam bhayam. That even by unconsciously chanting the Holy Name, this is just in the second chapter of the first canto, even by unconsciously chanting the Holy Name, which fear itself fears, then one can be immediately liberated. And in the middle of the Bhagavatam, smack in the middle, we see the pastime of Ajamil, where the glories of the Holy Name are extolled to no end. It's amazing the purports that our acharyas have written, the purports that Srila Prabhupada has written on that pastime. And then at the end, I don't remember the Sanskrit for the verse, but we hear it's at the very end of the Bhagavatam that one should take the Holy Name. The purport of this entire book, of everything that's been said, is that one should take shelter of the Holy Name in this Kali Yuga. I believe it's the last verse. I think that's the final verse of the Bhagavatam says that. In Vedic literature, the true essence of something can be understood by what it starts with, what it ends with, and what's right in the middle. The Bhagavad Gita is also like this. Therefore, our acharyas, they say that the Bhagavad Gita actually starts where Krishna starts speaking. It doesn't start from the first verse. The Bhagavad Gita proper, in the essence of it, starts where Krishna starts speaking, and it ends with the verse, Sarva Dharman Parityaja, and then the four verses, which are the Chatushloki, 10.8 through 10.11, they are the heart of the Bhagavad Gita, and therefore we can know the purport of the entire thing by studying these six verses. So the Bhagavatam is similar. The Ajamil pastime, that one in the first canto, and the one from the 12th canto, they extol the Holy Name, therefore we can understand by our understanding of how Vedic literature is laid out, that this is the purport of the Bhagavatam. And so, that was the point I was making. If we have an understanding of what's in the Bhagavatam, and we stop passively engaging with it, and we start actually contemplating it, we start thinking about these things, thinking about how they apply to our lives, thinking about how deep they are, thinking, and then by the blessings of the Vaishnavas, if we're able to develop some taste for hearing it, which comes. Vasudeva Katha Ruchi is supposed to come very early in a sadhaka's life, taste for Krishna Katha. Then we can actually experience it because it's non-different. The Govardhan Leela, when you read it, the potentiality is there to see it and to be a part of it. This is the power of the Bhagavatam because it's non-different from the Govardhan Leela. Even though it's words on paper, this is words on a page. It was probably printed in China. It's, you know, it's even an abbreviation of the pastime. It's not like every detail is here. Certainly every detail is in here. But this is the pastime. And it's only our consciousness, we have to keep that clear, it's only our consciousness that is stopping us from being able to experience that in full. The more we clean our consciousness, which happens by experiencing that, it doesn't happen by doing external things like all-night Ekadashi and, you know, being austere, taking cold showers, whatever it is that you do. It happens by the practice of bhakti. Then we can get glimpses of that. And we can actually experience these pastimes. It's a real thing. And it's very beautiful. And it's an opportunity. That's the beautiful thing. It's not, you should do this, you should do this. It's so beautiful. And it's an opportunity to move out of the gray. And I don't know about you, Damodar, but my life is up to this point, and especially before I came in contact with the devotees, looking back in hindsight, everything was pretty much gray. You know, at the time, because of the modes and because of my proclivities, I thought, yes, this is amazing. This is the peak of my life. This is wonderful. This is so great, and it's just going to get better. But if I look at it from a dispassionate perspective and with healthy hindsight, it was all gray. I was stuck in a particular realm, And I was just oscillating from one side to the other, sometimes depressed, sometimes joyous, but none of it was really fulfilling. Am I correct? Was your life the same way? I have a feeling that everyone's life is the same way, because this is the material world. And so Krishna is telling us, our acharyas are telling us, Srila Prabhupada is telling us, our gurudevs are telling us, come out of this world of gray. It's real, and it can happen. Faster than you'd think, actually. So anyway, I'll stop there. I have to run. I think we're 5 minutes over. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Shri Shri Kishore Kishore ki jai. Jagannath Baladev Subhadra Maharani ki jai. Shri Shri Gaur Nitai ki jai. Shri Prabhupada ki jai. Vaishnav Bhaktivrinda ki jai.